This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Chris Jochnik, Director of the Private Sector Department at Oxfam America, a nonprofit dedicated to finding long-term solutions to poverty, hunger, and social injustice around the world. Chris is the co-founder of the Center for Economic and Social Rights and teaches a course at Harvard Law School on business and human rights. Chris Jochnik is here today to tell us about Oxfam's Behind the Brands campaign, which aims to hold the largest food and beverage companies accountable for what happens in their supply chains and calls on them to take steps towards a just food system. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Oxfam?
Sure. Oxfam is one of the larger international relief and development organizations. Oxfam America is part of a larger Oxfam family with offices in over 90 countries around the world. And we are out to, what we say, right the wrong of poverty and injustice. So we believe that in order to really solve those types of long-term structural issues, you need to address the problems at the roots, which means empowering people in countries and addressing some of the global structural issues through advocacy and campaigns. And that's basically what we do at Oxfam and Oxfam America.
What is the goal or purpose of your Behind the Brands campaign? Why was it started?
Well, we looked out at a number of industries that affect people living in poverty, and the food system is perhaps the most central. It is critical both to smallholder farmers around the world who make up around 80% of people who live in poverty, and it's also critical to ensuring that people get enough to eat. And as we looked across the food system, we saw that it was failing people at both ends. It was failing the 1.5 billion smallholder farmers, but it was also failing consumers in many ways. And so we set out to raise awareness about some of those failings and to put pressure on some of the large companies in the middle of the food system who could really drive changes that would benefit farmers, communities, women, and the like.
Would you say more about why you're focusing your efforts on food and beverage companies?
Well, there are various actors when you look across that food system. There are the small producers or the farmers, they're the farm workers. They will typically sell into traders who then sell into larger traders and processors, and then it'll eventually arrive at these large food and beverage companies, and they will either sell to the public directly or to retailers. And when we try to think about the ways that we could have some kind of impact on that system, we decided that the best targets would be these large food and beverage companies because they exercise enormous influence and they're also well known to consumers. So these are major brands like Nestle and Coca-Cola. And we believe that in order to really move those companies, we needed to engage the constituencies that they would listen to, and that includes consumers as well as others like investors and the public at large. But we wanted major brands that people would recognize. So we decided that instead of focusing closer to, let's say, the farmer or to the traders who are often anonymous, we picked these large, very recognizable brands and decided to focus our work on them.
And your campaign also focuses on looking at the supply chains. Why did you focus on supply chains?
Well, supply chains are, on the one hand, very opaque, and they're almost unknown to people when they're eating or drinking their popular food and beverages. They have no sense of how that food came to arrive in their local restaurant or supermarket, and they're starting to demand and they're starting to get better information about things like calories and nutrients and so forth on the consumption side, but there's almost nothing that will help them understand whether the product has been delivered in a sustainable way or whether the farmers are benefiting or whether land or water are being seized in the process of making those foods and those sorts of things. So we wanted to raise awareness and bring some light to the supply chain side that today really sits in almost total darkness.
How does your Behind the Brands campaign work? How is it set up?
So what we did is we spent about a year and a half looking at seven key issues, and I'll just list those issues. They were land, women, farmers, workers, climate change emissions or greenhouse gas emissions that affect climate change, transparency, and water. And we believe that those seven issues were really critical. They had large impacts on those communities and workers and smallholder farmers in the supply chain. So once we had identified those issues, we then spent a number of months developing a set of criteria by which we could measure company performance on each one of those. So amongst those seven teams, we developed about 30 or 40 indicators for each one. So we have a total of well over 200 indicators. And that then allowed us to look at each of the 10, we focused on the 10 largest food and beverage companies, and we were able to score them based on the criteria. And we developed the criteria very much in discussions with the companies themselves, with outside experts, with NGOs, with academics. We wanted to make sure that the criteria and that the scoring would be reasonable, it would be understandable, but it would also be demanding. We did want to push the envelope with the companies. And then we put that scorecard into a very simple sort of user-friendly format. It judges each company on a scale of 1 to 10 based on all those different criteria. We set it up on the web so that anybody that wants can quickly go to a company, look at the theme they want to see, they can see the score, they can see the criteria, and they can see all the information behind that score, which will gives them a sense of why we scored a particular company in a particular way. So transparency is a big part of this exercise. We wanted it to be very accessible, and we wanted the companies themselves to also be more transparent. And so one other critical piece of this was we spent a lot of time with the companies requesting information, giving them their preliminary scores, asking them to correct any mistakes, asking them to provide additional information. And so all 10 companies really, I think, as a product of all that work, engaged with this scorecard in a way that we were hoping we would create a race to the top. And we wanted to push the companies to really try to improve their scores and to feel some competitiveness about it. And in the end, it's been over a year now that we've been working with the scorecard in a public way. The companies really have engaged, and they have tried to improve their scores. And 9 of the 10 companies after 1 year had significantly improved their score on one or more of these different themes. That's the sort of back office technical part of this. But where the scorecard really comes to life is when we try to raise public awareness about these issues. And so putting a scorecard like this onto the web and talking to the companies really wouldn't, we don't believe, drive the type of change that we're hoping for. And so the other side of this is a very public-facing effort to bring consumers and the public and the media, along with investors and other stakeholders, into this effort and to get them to start engaging directly with the companies. So anybody that wants to can go to the website, look at the companies, look at the different scores, and then very easily tweet or send an email or post something on Facebook. And so that we're trying to really create a public dialogue around these different issues. And to date, we've had almost 500,000 people engage with the scorecard and push companies in one way or another.
Which are the specific companies that are on your top 10 list?
So again, these are determined by size, and the top 10 largest food and beverage companies by size, 6 of them are from the U.S., so Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Mars, Mondelez, which broke off from Kraft, General Mills, Kellogg, and then 4 other companies from Europe, Unilever, Nestle, Danone, and Associated British Foods.
Could you also give some specific examples of the indicators that you use in your scorecard?
Sure. What's difficult is that if you look at any one of these companies, they have dozens, if not hundreds, of brands underneath them. So that means that, you know, Coca-Cola has all kinds of beverage products out on the market. PepsiCo has all kinds of beverage and snack products. And many times you don't even know when you're eating a particular product that it's actually owned by a company like a Unilever, for example. All of that information is on our website so that people can quickly get there. But what that means is that it's very hard for us to take even just one of these companies and look at their impacts around the world if we were really going to go deep. And so what we decided to do is we're going to stay at a fairly high level, and our indicators really get to sort of a 30,000-foot level. We're looking at things like, does the company recognize this particular issue as urgent and critical? So is a company, is the CEO talking about climate change emissions, or is it talking about water grabs or water scarcity? Is it talking about gender issues? Is the company then making certain commitments to those issues? Is it committing to ensure that women are treated well in the supply chain, or that small farmers get a fair shake in the supply chain? Is it making those commitments public? Is it driving those commitments down through the supply chain via supplier codes of conduct, which are standard in these industries? And then is it joining with other actors to try to really reform the way businesses operate in different countries? So we were able to go about that far down. We were not able to look at actual practices in countries. But we believe that if a company is publicly committing to these issues, if it's raising awareness, if it has strong standards in its supplier codes, if it is joining with other stakeholders to try to push for reforms, that those will be good indicators, at least, of company behavior. And if we can drive more transparency in the supplier code so that we can start connecting the companies with their suppliers, that will allow communities and NGOs and the public to start holding the companies more accountable to those commitments. So that's the way it's designed. It does, of course, have the shortcoming that a company may score well on this scorecard and still have significant problems in a particular country. We can't warrant that a high score on the scorecard is going to immediately translate into certain practices in the field, but we're trying to do our best to create a proxy for that via the scorecard and then the kind of transparency that will lead to more accountability.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Chris Jochnik, Director of the Private Sector Department at Oxfam America. Our topic is Oxfam's Behind the Brands campaign, and you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Your most recent scorecard came out in May. What were the results?
People can see the results on the website. I hope that some of the listeners will get a chance to go in there. But the results are basically that 9 of 10 companies have significantly improved. And the companies near the top include Nestle, Unilever, Coca-Cola, and Pepsi. All of those companies have started off fairly strong and have continued to improve their scores. And then we have some laggards, including General Mills, Kellogg's, and Associated British Foods, which started off not nearly as strong and have seen some improvement, except for General Mills, but are still significantly lagging. And then there's a few companies in the middle. And the themes that tend to draw higher scores have been the themes of water, transparency, worker rights, and where we've seen companies really lagging and almost ignoring the issues are on things like land rights, women's rights, to some extent, how smallholder farmers and producers are treated. Those tend to get less attention from the companies, and by the same token, the companies score worse on those issues.
For the companies that have tended to improve versus those that don't, do you see any obvious differences in the way they operate?
Well, that's a great question. One of the things we would like to do eventually, and we've been approached by folks to try to do this, is to measure whether a high score or rapid improvement in the scorecard could be linked to shareholder value. Could we say that a company that is able to quickly turn around and improve its score on a particular issue, would that be a proxy for a well-functioning company and a company that does have enough vision to recognize problems as they occur and to try to seize the moment and address them? We think that it can and it should, and we know that where companies have been measured on their leadership on sustainability, that has tended to correlate with a higher rising share price. But in this case, what we've tended to see is that some companies are just more responsive generally to the public, to the consumers, and to NGOs like Oxfam. And so when we first launched the card, for example, we went to each one of the headquarters and we did protests and, you know, in a friendly manner, but an effort to just sort of raise attention, draw a little bit of media. And some companies were very friendly and outgoing and responsive to that, and others really sort of crossed their arms and took sort of a defensive posture. And I think that that has tended to correlate with what we've seen generally about company culture. Some companies are just not as open to dealing with stakeholders or dealing with the public as others. And the ones that are tend to be the ones that are doing well on the scorecard.
Let's talk now about some of the specific actions you have taken using the results from your Behind the Brands scorecard. What action was taken in regard to the inequality faced by women working on farms around the world?
When we look at inequality of women, it's an issue that is so pervasive that it's tough to get your head around or to deal with in sort of a practical way. And so what we did is, the scorecard is looking at 16 different commodities, and we chose a commodity where we knew that women were faring poorly, and we knew that the companies had a more direct connection with those women. Some of the commodities involve such long supply chains, it's a little tougher, but with the commodity that we chose, which was cocoa, the cocoa buyers, and in this case we picked the top three from our list, which were Nestle, Mars, and Mondelez, they have quite a lot of influence over the way cocoa is grown and how small producers and farm workers are treated. And those three companies alone control 40% of all the cocoa purchase globally, so they also exercise a lot of market share and market influence. And so what we did is we focused on those three companies, we focused on cocoa in their supply chains, and we did a report showing that women were being discriminated against at every part of the supply chain. So women workers were being harassed and weren't paid as well. Women farmers weren't able to own land in many cases, were not given the same access to financial services or the sort of agriculture support that companies often provide. And that, you know, in the communities where they lived, also women were discriminated against in those communities that depend on cocoa. And, you know, we don't hold the companies responsible for all of that, of course, but we do know that the companies have a significant influence and they are able to improve conditions of those women and to push for more equal treatment of women along the supply chain. And so we looked at each of the three companies and how they were doing, and we asked them to do three things. We asked them first to disclose the impacts of women in their supply chain. So we asked them to do studies to really get at the question of how women were being treated all along the supply chain. They had never done that, and we asked all three companies to do it. And we wanted them to make those studies public. Secondly, we asked them to commit to sign on to something called the Women's Empowerment Principles. It's a UN document. And to push that commitment down through the supply chain by putting specific provisions into their supplier codes of conduct about the treatment of women. And then finally, we asked them to be public champions for women's rights in various fora where cocoa and the conditions of the cocoa industry are being discussed and where standards are being created. So we wanted them to be advocates. And we went to each of the three companies and we asked them to sign up to those three commitments. It took them a little while, but once we had raised the issue, once we had gotten some media, and once we started pushing consumers and others to also raise these issues with the companies. And we also went to their shareholders and their investors. And so we tried to exercise as much pressure as we could. All along, we were also talking to their executives and their CEOs, trying to raise the importance of these issues. And these are not just issues for Oxfam. These are issues that the industry has to address. You know, the discrimination against women is actually a bottom line issue for many of these industries. If they don't get on top of it, women workers and women farmers are really a critical part of their supply chain. So after doing that, all three companies eventually came around and agreed to those three commitments. And we set up a roadmap on the website behindthebrands.org where people can see what those commitments were and by what time the companies have to comply with them. So, for example, the companies have to do these studies and make them public. There's a certain date when they've committed to do that by, and we will keep following up to make sure that the commitments are, in fact, implemented. So that's what it looked like on gender. Now, we still don't know how that's going to trickle down to affect women in the field. And so Oxfam will be working with other partners in the field, women's organizations, to make sure that the kinds of commitments that are being made at the headquarters of these vast multinational corporations do eventually have some kind of concrete impact in the field. And that's really where we're going to spend much of the next few years, at least in terms of that question of women's rights and this particular campaign.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Chris Jochnik, Director of the Private Sector Department at Oxfam America. Our topic is Oxfam's Behind the Brands campaign. You've also taken an action in regard to land rights of communities. Would you speak about that?
This is really interesting. When we started Behind the Brands a little more than a year ago, we looked at the issue of land rights and whether the 10 companies that we were targeting recognized the threat that industrial agriculture posed to smallholder farmers and communities and others around the world. And this is really a coming issue where many communities are being pushed off their land that they've traditionally farmed or used over generations. They're being pushed off it as more foreign investors and other large companies are coming into places like Africa or Southeast Asia to start pushing for more industrial agriculture for export purposes. And so land has become really a big development issue in a sense, and it's an important one for groups like Oxfam, but it goes almost completely unremarked upon by the large food and beverage companies. So when we first did our scorecard, the majority of the companies had no public awareness or no recognition or no commitments around land. So what we did is we looked at one commodity in particular. There are three commodities that really have big impacts on land: sugar, palm oil, and soy. Amongst those, we decided to focus on sugar because that's a commodity that consumers can really relate to more than something like palm oil or soy. And we looked at the three large sugar purchasing and producing companies in our list, and that was Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, and Associated British Foods. and we did a report showing how their supplies of sugar were connected to land rights violation, where communities and smallholder farmers were being pushed out violently from their land in order to start producing sugar for export. And we went to the companies again with these three asks of, we want you to do the kinds of studies that will show how land is impacted in your supply chains. So that's the first commitment we wanted the companies to make. We call it knowing and showing. Know the impact and show it publicly. Secondly, we wanted them to commit to what we called zero tolerance for land grabs. And a land grab is a violent or a seizure of land that is done against communities or others that have traditionally lived there. And third, we wanted them to be public champions for land rights. We wanted them to start raising awareness vis-a-vis governments or industry actors or other business partners. And when we first started talking about that with the companies, they really were very wary of even conceding that there were land issues that they had to be made more aware of. They didn't think that this was a problem for them, and they were certainly not ready to talk about land grabs or zero tolerance or the likes. After 3 months of campaigning, PepsiCo and Coca-Cola both committed to zero tolerance for land grabs. They agreed to do the studies about land conflicts in their supply chain, and they've committed to the principle of free, prior, and informed consent, which gives communities the rights to decide whether or not they want to sell their lands, and they agreed to be public champions. And two of the key brands within Associated British Foods also agreed to abide by free, prior, informed consent and to respect land rights. So in just 3 months, those three companies really came around, and after 6 months, we saw 8 of the 10 companies agree to publicly recognize land rights and the principle of free, prior, informed consent, which was really remarkable to see that kind of movement in just 6 months of pushing. And now, because of that, we're starting to see other actors in those supply chains also, like Cargill or Bunge or ADM, the sort of middlemen, are also starting now to talk about free, prior, informed consent and are being forced by the public attention, not just by Oxfam. This has been a growing issue, but it certainly helps to have 8 of the 10 largest food and beverage companies who they supply to now also pushing this issue of land rights. And we're starting to see the results in countries. So the two countries we focused on initially, Brazil and Cambodia, the governments have already started now to take action on some of the land conflicts that we were looking at, and they have set up public inquiries, and the media is starting to cover it. So we see that even just getting a commitment from like Coca-Cola or a PepsiCo to a zero tolerance for land grabs, some people might say, well, talk is cheap. That doesn't get you very far. But in fact, that kind of a commitment by one of those companies has immediate impacts at the level of the media, government action, communities, stakeholders, business partners. We do see the kind of influence that these companies can exercise when they decide to get behind an issue. And so that's really what we're trying to do with Behind the Brands, get some of those large companies to start using their influence in a pro-poor manner.
Let's focus now on your most recent action on climate change. How much do the 10 large food and beverage companies you evaluate contribute to climate change? What is their role?
In general, the climate change debate has been dominated by, of course, the fossil fuel industry and the large oil companies like Exxon and Chevron, and rightly so, because they're really contributing the most, and they're also very politically active in creating confusion around some of the science of climate change. But the food and beverage industry is also implicated in climate change, and it's been estimated that the agriculture system contributes about 25% of the greenhouse global gas emissions. That's a significant fraction that is going far less recognized or addressed. So when we went out and looked at our companies, these 10 largest food and beverage companies, we estimated that the emissions associated with their supply chains, if they were combined, would equal about the same emissions of the 26th largest country in the world. So just these 10 enormous companies has that kind of impact on climate change. And the irony here is that climate change is hurting those same companies. It creates instability in their supply chains. It creates scarcity in certain regions where they need the water and they need a stable climate in order to grow the commodities. And so the companies are not only contributing to the problem, but they're also suffering from it. And they have largely sat on the sidelines of this issue. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to push the companies first to be more transparent about their emissions and about their contribution to the problem, but we also are asking them to step up and be leaders for their own bottom line purposes, but to be leaders on stepping up to the fossil fuel industries and others and forcing more progressive climate change policies.
What were the climate change results for your most recent scorecard for the companies?
Again, some of the same companies that tend to be at the top of the list remain there on climate. So Nestle and Unilever, for example, are quite good on climate change. Coca-Cola and PepsiCo also have been fairly constructive in many ways and are out front on some climate change issues. And we've seen laggards, the same laggards on the scorecard generally have tended to lag on climate change as well. And so Kellogg and General Mills in particular are two companies that we are targeting in our campaign on emissions because they've tended to lag in terms of being willing to be more transparent about greenhouse gas emissions in their supply chains and being willing to commit to certain levels of emissions. And so we are currently pushing those two companies in particular, but the report that we released on climate change addressed the contribution of all these 10 companies to the problem.
Would you go into more detail about what you would like for the companies to do in regard to climate change?
Sure. Again, just like the campaigns on gender and on land, we have three basic asks. First, we want them to really know and show what their role is in contributing to climate change. So we want them to do the kind of studies about emissions, but we want them to do it not just at their own headquarters, but rather all down the supply chain where we know that the majority of emissions are happening. And companies have tended to be much stronger about making commitments and being more transparent about their own direct operations. They've been very weak on making commitments around their supply chains. So the first one is to do those sorts of studies and to make those studies public. The second is to make commitments on the levels of emissions in their supply chain. And so we want Kellogg and General Mills to make commitments not only, again, about their operations, but about their suppliers as well. And we want those commitments to be based on the best science around what would be acceptable levels of emissions for the kinds of commodities that are in their supply chains. And then third, we want them to step up and come off from the sidelines and be public advocates for stronger government policies and stronger industry practices on climate change. So those are the three requests we are making of Kellogg and General Mills in particular. We're in serious discussions with both companies, and just as we've seen companies move on questions of gender and land through this campaign, I expect that Kellogg and General Mills will also come around and work with us towards reaching those three asks.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
That consumers and the public can make a real difference by engaging with companies around these kinds of issues. We've seen remarkable movement on questions of gender and women's rights, on land. We're beginning to see it on climate change. And that is directly a product of the levels of engagement of consumers and of the public. And this particular platform that we've created at Behind the Brands gives people a very easy way to engage with this campaign. And I hope your listeners will at least give it a look and begin to engage with some of these companies.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Chris.
Thank you, Diane.
You were just listening to Chris Jochnik, Director of the Private Sector Department at Oxfam America. For more information, check on the web at behindthebrands.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on Listener Powered 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.